Well, you can imagine family of four trying to survive on very little food, and things aren't getting better. And you look across the sea there and you see the mountains of a distant country. You think maybe things are going to be better over there. The husband decides we're going to need to move. If we're going to live, we're going to need to move. And so they move to a neighboring country that's not very friendly. They're actually enemies, so there's some risk there, but perhaps there's a greater risk of staying in your own land. But after they move, the husband dies, and now there's great risk. Who will provide for them? Well, at least there's still two sons. And they get married within the culture there, but then they die. And now Naomi is alone. What will she do? She's alone in a strange land. She's not with her people. Yes, there's the two daughter-in-laws, but they can't carry on her family name. They can't take care of her. How can they provide food for her? How will she live? And so she hears one day, perhaps as she's working out in the field, she hears that God has visited his people in Israel. There's food. So she decides to go back. But what should she do about her daughters-in-law? So she urges them to go back. One goes back, but the other does not. The other stays, clings to her. And so she's entering Jerusalem, or Bethlehem rather. And the people of the town are looking. Could that be who we think it is? They ask, is this Naomi? Naomi, her name means pleasant. And she says, don't call me pleasant. I need a new name to describe the things that have happened to me. Call me Mara. Mara means bitter. Call me Mara, for the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. I went away with two sons. I went away with a husband in search for food, and I have come back with nothing. Some of you know how Naomi feels. You have loss in your life. Maybe it's just a simple loss as you have gone through times in your life where you haven't had anything to eat. And you have had to move. Maybe the loss is moving. You know, there's loss and move. You've had to move even within your own town to a different place that you could afford or because of your family situation. Maybe you've had to move different states or to a different country. There's loss there. You're leaving relationships. You're leaving friends. It's hard on your family. Maybe your loss is similar to hers as well, in that you have had a death in your family. That some of you, your husbands have died. You know how she feels. Some of you, your wives have died. Some of you have lost children. You know the pain. And sometimes it's so painful to the point where you might say, the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. I was full, now I'm empty. And we find in our loss and in our bitterness, not knowing where to turn, we find ourselves hearing other people saying, you just need to get over it. You just need to move on. You need to pick yourself up. You need to get back to work. Because that's just what people do. But you know, I'm thankful that we don't see that in the Bible. No one in this passage told Naomi to get over it. Ruth never said that. The people in the town never said that. They never said, well, if you had only not moved, then this wouldn't have happened. As we hear sometimes people saying to us, if you had only done this, sometimes we hear it from our own selves, if you had only not done this. The Bible doesn't gloss over things like this, doesn't gloss over pain, doesn't gloss over loss. And Naomi here, she's not rebuked for her comments about God. Actually, her comments attribute power to God, that He is Almighty. Other cultures, they believed in gods. It was a very religious time, a very religious culture, where people would attribute all events in the world to God, that He was in control, or to the gods. And in this case, Naomi being a Israelite, she attributes all things to the Lord Almighty. The name that she uses of God actually means that He is all-powerful. It's not just bad luck that's happened to her. It's not just that the cards that she was dealt was a bad hand. No, she knows that this is from God, that God gives life and God takes life away, that God sends times of abundance and He also sends famine, that He is Lord. And it's hard to see clearly in our pain. We don't always see things clearly. We don't see things the way that God sees them. And so from our perspective, it may seem as though God is against us or that we have been dealt with bitterly. And maybe Naomi asked, why? Why would God take my husband? Why would He take my sons? Why would He take everything that I had life and joy in? We might be asking similar questions in times of our grief. We don't know the answers. But as one person reminds us, the presence of tragedy does not mean that the Lord has forgotten His covenant people. The presence of tragedy does not mean that the Lord has forgotten His covenant people. Sometimes it takes a while to see God's provision, what He is doing, how He is working. We're only in chapter 1. There are 4 chapters, and so there is time. Even in this dark period of history for Israel, we see God's faithfulness, don't we? We just read about the judges. It was a dark time. People followed their own ways. The last sentence of Judges, you might be able to see it there in your Bibles. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So there's just this people without a shepherd, people without a leader, they're just wandering in the darkness. They're straying from the Lord. And yet God raises up judges for them, His kindness to them. And then they turn away and God turns from them in their sin. We have a pattern, turning to God, turning away, turning to God, turning away, no judge, raising up a judge, no judge. It's kind of like a roller coaster if we were to draw a line. And yet this story takes place in the context of the time of the judges. And so we see, even in this story, we see God's provision, how He provides in the midst of loss. So first of all, God provides unlikely people. God provides unlikely people. Let's look at this relationship here. We talked about what the name of Naomi means, pleasant, and how she said, call me bitter, Mara. The name Ruth means friendship. And we see that in Ruth here. We see that she becomes Naomi's friend. The relationship here is perhaps unlikely. I mean, we're talking about a daughter-in-law, mother-in-law relationship. We all know that those tend to be sometimes friction there. They're notorious. I think they even named a plant after mother-in-law's tongue or something. Isn't that right, Eva? There's something like that. Mother-in-law's tongue. I think it's a poisonous plant. I'm not sure about that, but I know there's something like that. And we see these relationships. Maybe some of you think about your mother-in-law, or if you're a mother-in-law, you think about a daughter-in-law, and how there can be friction there, how sometimes the relationship could be troubled. How many of you are friends with your mother-in-law or friends with your daughter-in-law? Close friends. That is possible too. So there's an unlikely relationship. Think of Ruth's age. The age, there's a big age difference, perhaps. Naomi, she is the mother. She could probably be old enough to be Ruth's mother. And yet there is a very close relationship there. But think even further. Think of the nationality here. Ruth is from a different country. She is a Gentile. This is a big stumbling block, a big barrier that was between the Jews and the Gentiles. They would not associate with them. They would see them as very different. They were unclean people. And yet, here we have a relationship between a Jew and a Gentile. But think even further of the religion. Ruth was from a different religion. She had worshipped other gods, especially the god Chemosh. They would actually sacrifice children to this god. And yet, Ruth here has said, "Your God will be my God." She has become a believer in Naomi's God. She invokes his name. And this is in the context of, remember, the nation of Israel had been turning away from God, and yet here is someone who's from another nation turning to God that we see. A very unlikely relationship. God providing this friendship, this closeness with an unlikely person of Ruth. Well, in the midst of loss, God does that sometimes. He provides through unlikely people. I just heard a story this week about a man named Frank and his wife Carol. This happened several years ago, but they lost their 8-year-old daughter to cystic fibrosis. There was nothing that they could do. And they watched her basically waste away and die. And they knew that they could not have any more children. It just wasn't safe for them. It was a hereditary condition. And so one day Carol came to Frank and she said, "What do you think about adoption?" And he said yes with no joy in his heart, just to more placate his grieving wife. And he thought in his heart, "Well, it won't work anyway. We're too old. The chances that we'll even get someone, I don't think it'll happen." But he had a brother who worked in the Philippines. And he called his brother up and he asked for advice. "Well, you know, what should we do?" And so his brother said, "You know, I know this woman who works through adoption, things like this. Let me talk to her." And so he called her up. And she said, "You know, I have this mother who's young and she's about to give birth. And the baby is actually promised to a diplomat from another country. And when the baby was born, she called up the diplomat and said, 'Your baby is ready.' And they said, 'What is it?'" And again, "What is it?" "Well, it's a girl." "Oh, we don't want it." And so immediately she thought of Frank and Carol and she said, "We have a baby for you." And within 36 hours after the baby was born, this little girl was at Frank's brother's house in the Philippines. But then they went through all kinds of bureaucracy, 4 months worth. And after that, they eventually flew to the Philippines to pick up this little girl. And the day they flew home was 1 year to the date of their daughter's death. And God had provided an unlikely person for them in the midst of their tragedy. Have you seen God work in this way? Where he's provided unlikely people in the midst of loss. Well, God also provides reminders of his presence. And we see this in verse 16. Look at verse 16. Ruth, she's the determined one. She says, "Do not urge me. I have made up my mind. Don't tell me to leave you or go back to my land, because wherever you go, I'm going to go. And wherever you stay, I'm going to stay. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. When we read those words, when Naomi heard those words, I can't help but think she was hearing covenantal language. When God said to his people, I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God. Or in Leviticus, where God says, I will walk among you and will be your God, and you shall be my people. God committing himself to a people. And here we see Ruth committing herself with language. She may not even know this language. And yet God is working through her, reminding Naomi of who he is. We also see her taking this oath in verse 17. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. We see that Ruth here has already become a follower of God. If she is making an oath in his name, invoking his name, that dire circumstances will happen to me if I don't carry through what I have promised to do with you. And then we see also verse 17, where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. I will not leave you. My commitment is such to you that I will be with you to death. This is another covenantal phrase, never will I leave you or forsake you, God says. And so God is reminding Naomi of his presence through Ruth. Have you ever thought of someone who you thought, surely they're an unbeliever, and they are ones to remind you of who God is? Surprisingly, we see that here in this story. Well, God also provides not just unlikely people, not just reminders of his presence, but he provides a sacrificial service. And this is really where we see the actions of Ruth, apart from her words that are certainly following her words, actions of love. And it struck me that Naomi is pleading with Ruth to leave. There is no future for you. And think about it. Ruth has already been married. Her husband has died. If she goes to Israel, who's going to want to marry someone from Moab? Who's going to want to marry someone who has already been married, whose husband has died? In this culture, who is going to want to be with someone like Naomi, who there's no future for her? Naomi said, I'm not going to get remarried here. I'm old. I'm too old to have a husband, she says in verse 12. And even if I had a husband right now and had a baby, would you wait for this baby to grow up? Maybe that was a reference to what we see in Deuteronomy, live her at marriage, where the brother of the deceased husband was supposed to take on the wife, his wife. And so the name of the family would continue, that she would have children. She has no children here. There's really, from a human perspective, there's not much hope for her to have a, what some people would call, a fulfilling or satisfying life. And so she had no duty to Naomi. She did not have to go with her. And Naomi is urging her not to go, but yet she follows. And this struck me. Ruth is following out of love. She is leaving everything. She's leaving her mother and father. We find out later in the book that her parents are still living. She's leaving her country. She's leaving her people. She's leaving her land. She's leaving her religion. She's leaving everything to follow Naomi. There was great sacrifice here. She's putting Naomi before her. I will serve you for the rest of my life. And it's a good reminder to us when we see these types of things, how God provides. What a great comfort for Naomi, and yet she may not have been able to see it right away. That God has not forgotten you in pain or loss. He knows your pain. And that is not just a trite phrase, God knows your pain. Sometimes we can say that to people who are grieving, and that doesn't mean anything. One person said, generalized thoughts about God do not minister to my soul. When you say God knows your pain, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And this is what I mean. God gave up his only son, Jesus Christ, for us. And think about Jesus. Jesus is an unlikely provision for us. From all sense of what we could make sense of it, or the people in that time, he was born as a baby. People were looking for a Messiah. They were looking for a king. They were looking for a strong ruler. And here comes this baby. And the baby couldn't even be born in an inn that was born in some feeding trough for cattle. Unlikely. And when Jesus grew up and came into Jerusalem, he was riding not on a white horse. He was riding on a donkey. Again, unlikely. And then he died a death of a criminal, like a robber or a thief on the cross. Unlikely. But yet he was the Son of God. He was the only person who could fill our loss. Because we experience pain and death and loss because of the presence of sin in the world. All of God's creation was marred. Everything went wrong in the garden. And now we have a skewed relationship to God. We have a skewed relationship to other people. And we go through these things of death in our families. We go through these tough things of moving and not having enough food to eat at times. Pain in our bodies. And Jesus is the only one who can bring us back to God, because he took our sin, he nailed it to the cross, and gave us his perfect life. Well, Jesus is not only just an unlikely provision for us, he's also a reminder of God's presence. Jesus Christ, he is God. He is God in the flesh. He is Emmanuel, God with us. He came to us. He suffered loss. He left his glory with the Father. He could have stayed and enjoyed the glory that he had, and yet he humbled himself. He became obedient. And then Jesus is also one who is a sacrificial servant. He did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And Jesus gave to the death. Just as Ruth said, "Where you die, I will die." Jesus went to the cross for us. And so we find God has not dealt bitterly with us, but he has dealt graciously with us. He has shown us mercy. He has given us his Son, and now Jesus frees us to submit to him. He frees us to ask forgiveness for our sins, to believe in him, to trust in him with our whole lives. He frees us to serve other people. He frees us to give up the comforts that we have here. He frees us to leave our families, to move to different places. He frees us to serve people from other countries, to serve those who are unlike us, to serve those who believe in other gods. He frees us to leave all. One said, isn't Jesus the one who said, count the cost? For those who leave father and mother, brothers and sisters will gain back 100-fold. So the question is, how do we, Christian, serve others? How have we left the things that we perhaps hold dear? How have we given sacrificially? How have we demonstrated the loving kindness of God? How do we care for widows in our own church? How do we care for widows in the community and widowers? Let us take hope from Ruth, who shows God's steadfast love, commits herself to Naomi, an ordinary person who is following the Lord, the God of Israel. May we also take hope in our loss that God has not forgotten his people. He is faithful, and he has given us so much. Even in the midst of our loss, he has given us Jesus Christ.